May it please the Court. Your Honor, my name is Craig Albert, and I'm here for the appellant, Vincent Cassano. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes of my time for rebuttal. Your Honor, this Court's 2001 decision is the touchstone for today's case. Judge Canby and his colleagues already decided everything that is needed to reverse and to remand, this time with tailored instructions to the district court as to how to go about completing this case. The only things that were left to do in 2001 were to conduct limited damages discovery and then to calculate the damages that were due Mr. Cassano for his owed for his one-half partial copyright ownership of the LIU compositions.
Now, where would you disagree with you on that? That's the end of your case?
Pardon me?
Let's say we disagree with you on that. Is that the end of your case?
That's not the end of the case at all, because in any event, there would still have been if there were an open issue with respect to ownership, there would still have been an issue with respect to whether the royalties that were owed on the undisputed share that Mr. Cassano was still owed, that is his writer's share, was actually paid.
Fair enough. But you're misreading our case. I mean, you know, the 1991 case, I mean, the Cassano one, the 2001 case, only held that the rights, whatever those rights were, were to your client after the bankruptcy. It didn't hold anything else.
Your Honor, in context, the 2001 decision actually went quite farther, much farther.
How could it?
Well,
how could it conceivably do everything you say it claims it does?
Because the issue in 2001 was, after coming out of the bankruptcy in 1990, what was it that Mr. Cassano owned? What were these song rights assets? And the 2001 decision.
The 2001 said this. He had coming out what he had going in.
That's right.
Whatever and that was, which just can't be, wasn't quite sure what it was, but says whatever it is he went in with, he came out with. And the reason he came out with it is because after the plan was approved, those rights reverted to your client, either by abandonment or by express statement.
By technical abandonment or by express provision of the plan.
But you can't, there would have been no occasion to adjudicate what those rights were. How could that case have done that, even if we purported to do so?
Because Judge Canby wrote that he understood what the copyright, what the song rights meant, what that scheduled asset meant. He said it was copyrights and rights to royalty payments for songs written for the band Kiss pre-petition.
Let's say that's what he said.
Right.
He certainly can't have adjudicated that. It's not a matter that had been adjudicated before.
Well, there's been no
proof of it.
There is no dispute that Mr. Cassano's claim to the copyrights in the LIU composition.
Was there anything more than his statement in the schedules that said, "I've got these song rights"? Was there any proof as to what any of those things consisted of? How could the Court of Appeals possibly have adjudicated what those rights consist of?
Your Honor, you need only look not to what Mr. Cassano said, but what counsel for the defendant said. Because when counsel for the defendant went both to the district court in 1999 and later to the bankruptcy court to oppose Mr. Cassano's application to reopen his bankruptcy, both of which were issues that the previous panel of this court decided, Mr. Wolfe said that what Mr. Cassano was asserting and what he had a right to and what he should not be permitted to reclaim was partial copyright ownership. Everyone understood that that was what he had brought in. That was what his that was Mr. Cassano's litigation position. That was what Mr. Wolf conceded when he went to the district court.
It doesn't matter. People can assume anything they want to. But the case in 91 can't possibly provide anything more, can't give your client anything more than he walked in at the time. He can't adjudicate, had no occasion to adjudicate those things. People have a way of referring to these things. They have to refer to them in some way, but he can't pluck stray statements out of people's out of opinions, out of people's statements in court, and treat us for an adjudication. The 2001 case, Cassano 1 had no occasion to adjudicate what those rights were. All it said is, whatever he walked in with, he walked out with. That's it. And I can't imagine how you are claiming anything else.
Your Honor,
where was the trial? I mean, these are there were disputed facts as to what they had. There was the 84 agreement, which arguably superseded the early agreement. That's position.
And the failure of the option under that agreement.
Where was that adjudicated? Was the trial?
The failure of the option? Because Mr. Cassano,
you answer my question. We can get to the failure of the option. I'm talking about the effect of the 1984.
Because Mr.
1984 agreement.
Right.
Where was that adjudicated? Whether that did or did not supersede the 1982 agreement.
It's adjudicated in the bankruptcy, because Mr. Cassano walks into bankruptcy court in 1989.
He says, I have certain rights.
Right. He says, I have song rights. And he says, there are other people around here who might be my creditors. And he says who they are. They were Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley, Klein and Eisen. He schedules them as creditors. He works his way through the bankruptcy. He submits his plan and gets his order.
And they don't challenge it.
And there are no challenges. He makes his way out. And he takes out, via technical abandonment or express provision of the plan, his song rights.
He takes out what he comes in with.
That's exactly right.
He can't, in the bankruptcy, claim that he owned the throne of England and come out with the throne of England.
Well, except...
If he had it going in, he had it coming out.
Except for one small fact. And that is,
as Judge Canby
found, the scheduling of the songwrite asset and the listing of Simmons and Stanley as creditors gave them inquiry notice. If there was a question, if somebody said, look, here's a copyright, it's not something that you can touch, it's an intangible, and there are competing claims to it. And if Simmons and Stanley thought that Cassano was claiming title to something that Simmons and Stanley claimed for them exclusively, then they had an obligation to step forward and say, no, this is ours. When it came out of the bankruptcy,
Why did they have the obligation?
Sorry?
Why did they have the obligation?
Your Honor.
The bankruptcy is not sort of a general place to adjudicate all rights between all the parties.
It is
a way of allocating assets of the estate. And he claims these things are mine. They may have had lots of reasons, including oversight, for not disputing it. But bankruptcy can't establish rights that didn't exist prior to bankruptcy.
It doesn't
resolve the dispute as though if there's a dispute.
Aren't you really attempting to turn what was basically a claim into the effect of it is some sort of a declaratory judgment action? That's what you're suggesting here. You're suggesting that this would be the same as a declaratory judgment action, and that in effect, because they didn't jump in, that it's res judicata now, and that they are bound by your client's assertion of his rights. And I think the point made by Judge Kosinski in his, England example, I mean, if I filed a bankruptcy and I listed as an asset Judge Kosinski's automobile, I should be have such temerity. I get through bankruptcy. Does that mean that, and if Judge Kosinski, who wasn't, you know, paying attention to my bankruptcy, all of a sudden I can come to his driveway and take his car?
You can have it.
I mean, I think.
That's really is the question.
That may well be a concern. But it is a concern that the previous panel, I think, squarely addressed.
Well, let's look at it. Show me the opinion. I got the opinion right. Sure. Here. You tell me where they squarely addressed it.
Okay.
Okay. I'm looking.
He
right
says.
At
this.
Page.
He's.
Page?
I'm on the.
Page.
I have the West version. Is that all right?
No, it's not.
Your Honor, I don't have the slip opinion. Slip opinion to my side.
Do you have a third side?
Yes.
Well, that's what we need.
Okay. So that's first the passage on 945, which we've discussed before. That is. That he scheduled the song rights asset, they reverted to him by technical abandonment and by express provision of the plan.
Right. So
second,
what it says is?
Second.
Garbage in, garbage out.
Okay. Second, he parses on pages 946 to 947, the carryover paragraph. He says, although it would have been more helpful for him to break down the description further so that it named songs, albums, dates of, and parties to royalties and copyright agreements, the additional detail would not have revealed anything that was otherwise concealed by the description as it was, which provided inquiry notice to affected parties, that is, Simmons and Stanley, to seek further detail if they required it. So what we have to figure out is, what do these song rights mean? And
what the court is looking at is whether or not during the course of the estate, the rights that he listed went to somebody else. That's what the court is considering.
Well,
so it's saying, look, if anybody had doubts about whether they needed to come in and claim that these rights really belong to the state, shouldn't revert to the debtor, they should have been on inquiry notice. I don't see where this resolves anything.
But then he says that what the song rights are copyrights and rights to royalty payments for songs written for the band Kiss pre-petition. And I think that
What is this?
Copyrights and he says what song rights are, and he says that they are. Missing the pin site to it right now, which is it's in the same paragraph that we were just referring to, the 946 to 947 carryover. The song rights asset can reasonably be interpreted to mean copyrights and rights to royalty payments for songs written for the band Kiss pre-petition. He's talking about two specific groups of assets. He is talking about the copyrights and the streams of royalty payments associated with the LIU compositions and the Creatures compositions. And the 2001 panel had before it the entire record of the proceedings of the bankruptcy court. He's looking at Judge Canby here goes through the proceedings in the bankruptcy court. And one of the things that they had looked at was the entry on was
but
what is now.
Read the first sentence of the next paragraph.
Pardon me?
Read the first sentence of the next paragraph.
Okay.
We conclude therefore, right? So this is what from listing all those things. This is what the.
We conclude, therefore, that his listing of the song rights asset was a sufficient scheduling of Cassano's interest in his pre-petition compositions, which reverted to him upon confirmation of the plan. So what reverted to him was his song rights. And what are those song rights?
His interest, whatever that interest may be.
But Judge,
his interest may be zero.
It may well be, Your Honor, but what you're doing is you've already said that songwrites was copyrights and royalties.
But what you're doing is doesn't make any difference. They're describing what went on. But what you're doing is you're attempting to give preclusive effect to this. You're attempting to suggest here that because they say whatever interest he had, he now has, means he has an interest. And that's a very different thing, as I think Judge Kosinski pointed out. There's a huge difference between saying whatever interest you had, you now have, and you have an interest.
Because
he's just making a claim.
In the extreme, Judge Ezra, if that is the case, then the appropriate thing to do would then be to remand so that Judge Matz can determine what it was that Mr. Cassano took into the bankruptcy case, because that is what he would then take out of the bankruptcy case.
Is that what he did? That's exactly what he did.
What you're arguing is that he was wrong because he was bound by the Court of Appeals prior determination that he had a specific interest.
Okay. Your Honor, I'd also like to address the issue of the damages discovery and the open book account. Because the primary element of Judge Matz's decision was that Mr. Cassano could not prove up damages. Now, the record is replete with Mr. Cassano requesting and being denied his discovery on the issue of
damages. I thought that the record was replete with instances of your client asking for time to do discovery and then not doing it. That's what I saw the record of being replete with. And sometimes your client saying, I don't need any discovery, and then still asking for more time or being given more time and not doing it. That's what I saw the record as. Am I misreading the record here?
I respectfully disagree. After the remand in 2001, what Mr. Cassano's lawyer said was that he did not need any more discovery on the issue of the Creatures of the Night compositions. Those were the ones claims that were going to be transferred. He did say in his Rule 26 report, in his 26F report, that they needed to finish up damages discovery. A lawyer of Mr. Cassano's then withdrew. And Mr. Cassano then attempted to get other counsel. As soon as he got other counsel, Mr. Benice appeared for him and requested 120 days to complete damages discovery. It's not really any discovery that's needed on the issue of the options. Everybody knows what happened. Everybody and the record of what happened in the bankruptcy court is what it is. No discovery is needed, but ultimately resolutions need to be made of that. He asked for that discovery. And he did not get that discovery. And the reason that he did not get that discovery at the conclusion of the case was that an associate of Mr. Benice's went to the scheduling conference, and then for some reason, Judge Matz said, well, I don't want to hear from this fellow. All discovery is cut off. Plainly, there was discovery that needed to be done on damages, because at a minimum, there was the issue of even Mr. Cassano's writer's share, even if he didn't own the copyrights.
How long had discovery been open?
Well, discovery had been closed for several years, and each time there was a trip up to the Court of Appeals, there had been a stay of discovery, and so what the judge said was, in order to bring the case to trial, you have to make a motion to reopen discovery, and that's what he asked for. And I think that it's reasonable to ask for the reopening of discovery and allow him that limited discovery. In the extreme, what Mr. Benice then said, look, if you're not going to give me that discovery, then at least afford me the presumption available under the Wolf versus Superior Court case in California. That casts the burden of proof in what is essentially an accounting case on the defendant to show that they have properly accounted. So having been denied discovery, having been denied the benefit of that presumption.
I'm sorry, I'm missing something here. Judge Matz said You got to move to reopen discovery. Did your client move to reopen discovery?
I'm sorry.
Did he move to reopen discovery?
He made the request in his 26F statement. They scheduled a joint status conference. The typical practice is that you come to a joint status conference and the judge sets a new discovery deadline, and that gets incorporated in the order. And it was at that session in which Judge Matt said, okay, that's it, the case is over.
Okay, when was the motion to reopen discovery filed?
There was no formal motion that was ever made to reopen discovery. Thank you, Your Honor. Oh, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Brian Wolf on behalf of the Appellees.
How are you, Mr. Wolf?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything you heard this morning that was not adequately covered in your brief?
Your Honor, I think that we've addressed all these points in our brief, but I would like to respond just briefly to a couple of the arguments that were made by counsel.
So I guess you think it was not adequately covered in your brief. Go ahead.
No, Your Honor, there's only a couple of points that were newly raised that I think are appropriate to respond to. Very briefly, and that is, number one, with respect to the argument that either this Court previously in its 2001 decision or the Bankruptcy Court in its 1990 plan of reorganization somehow abrogated or voided the governing agreements between the parties, between Cusano and Kiss, it finds no support in the record whatsoever.
That point was not in your brief?
It was in the brief.
Or you think we don't understand it?
Well,
were you present during?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, go ahead. Keep talking.
Mike, talk yourself out of the.
With that advice, then I'll rest on the papers, Your Honor.
I mean, were you present for this?
Yes, I was, Your Honor.
This thing?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Case is argued. Stand submitted.